So I do have a disclosure. For this project, I was a consultant for Evolve Communications, and I was also a subgrantee for the Colorado Health Foundation. This is just recognizing the authors of the project too, and you'll get more contact information at the end. I want to go back straight to the background, and really, encrucijada, sin salud no es nada, means crossroads, without health, there's nothing. And this was a project that was a result of creative minds, commitment, and really a strong group of people here in Colorado that were able to recognize and were passionate enough to address the health needs of one of the most vulnerable and underserved populations in the state, which is the Spanish-speaking community. For this particular project, I want you to keep in mind that this community has low health literacy levels and distrust of the health system and the overall system. So just keep that in mind, please. Some of the key partners for this project were the funders, the Colorado Health Foundation, who embraced the project and made it possible. The visionaries, who are the Colorado Department of Healthcare Policy and Financing, and Evolve Communications, and also Entrevision Communications and La Neta Tierra, who actually had the creative team that made this possible. So what were the objectives of Encrucijada? Increase the number of Spanish-speaking Latinos in Colorado who enrolled in CHP Plus and Medicaid. Increase the disease management knowledge of this population and modify the behaviors that will have an overall positive impact in health outcomes. And we were able to identify four main components of success. And here they are. We needed the support of a trusted TV station. And now we needed this because the research shows us that the Spanish-speaking community spend a lot more time watching TV and listening to the radio. So among all the research that we did, we were able to identify that this will be the vehicle for us to communicate. And we decided, after years of research and talking with people, that the intervention will be a 12 half-hour episodes that will be delivering this content. We also knew that it needed to be entertaining and educational, that it needed to have relevant characters and relevant health content, and I'll go into each of those. So the support from the trusted TV station, we were able to convince this TV station that has a 78% reach into the community to support us, to help us promote the intervention through the radio, through the internet, through their news broadcast, so we could promote the show. We also knew that we wanted to, our goal was to educate the community, but we also knew that if we could not entertain the community, we would have no audience to educate. So we really, we were very lucky to have the full support of the executive producer to give us all the components of a soap opera that we in public health didn't know anything about, but he did. So that was the hook to have the community engage and to be able to deliver all the health messages. We also were able to deliver storylines that really pertain to the community, and I'll tell you more about it in a little bit, and had the health topics that made it engaging to males and females, because when we looked at the evaluation, we had a very big percentage of the audience were males. Now, We knew we had relevant characters because the audience identified with them. We did a demographic analysis of the population. So we had the population here in the state is mainly Mexican, the Spanish-speaking population. Is mainly Mexican from the north. So we had several Mexicans. We had a person with diabetes, obese, young, old, religious. So we made sure that the characters reflected the community. And not only from the research that we did, but also we piloted. the main characters with a focus group. It was just one, but it was very important. We also decided to have health promoters as the main protagonists of the story because, one, the community identifies with the health promoters more than with the doctors. At the end of the day, when they go and seek services, they mainly talk with health promoters or PAs than doctors. And also, by choosing health promoters, that gave us room to be able to deliver the health messages easier. And we also, this was key to have professional actors that were skilled to deliver the health messages that were very specific, and that it would have been, to be honest with you, very difficult for another set of actors that were not trained well to be able to deliver that message. But in addition, they were also able to make the emotional connections that were crucial when we looked at the evaluation and when people kept coming back to see the show. And the main reason for the novela, the main reason why I think we were funding was the health content. I'm very proud to say that this was really a project that was developed for the community from people that serve the community. So in essence, we have two main groups. We have the advisory group and we have the working group. The advisory group was composed of community leaders and health professionals working with the community. So they, in essence, gave us the 25 topics that we were to cover, and they helped us prioritize. Once we had those topics, I got together with the advisory group, with the working group. And I made sure that the information, like it's been mentioned in several other presentations, was coming from scientific sources, from experts, but also from health promoters that were making, that were helping me transfer the information into simple terms, and that was culturally competent. And here again, I can tell you more a little bit later on how we were successful in integrating all those health messages, because it was a simple process, and in a way it was complex. It was people working in media, doing commercials and doing soap operas that have never worked in health content, and people working in health, working with people that we have never met together. So we really had to learn how to talk each other's language and how to appreciate each other. But at the end, the methodology was simple. We have 25 health messages. I did a little bit of research on health communication and social marketing and what was working there. Then we identified the health experts in each of the topics, and I interviewed all of them. And it was part of the deal that the health content had to be approved by the health experts. So while I was doing the interviews, I was providing summaries of each interview, and the health expert was approving that information before it was given to the executive producer. So it was a process of me providing health content for 25 topics, then the producer wrote the screen, I'm going back and forth on the words, and the screen, the scripts, and then that information was sent to develop the books that the screenwriters would develop. I had to review that again to make sure that the health information was the change, because the books were the ones used by the actors to deliver the message. And the final stage was actually viewing the recording, the production of each of the episodes to make sure that the information was delivered in an appropriate way. And I can tell you that even after going through so many of the steps, it was still interesting how the drama and the acting of the very good actors would totally change the content of the information. So just briefly, here are the health topics cover. We have 12 episodes again, and each of the episodes had to cover CHP Plus and Medicaid information. So the first episode was used mainly to establish the hook for the audience. And we mainly cover CHP Plus and Medicaid. And then, with the exception of one episode that was only just one health topic, and all the other episodes had so much information, prenatal care, healthy eating, sports physical, childhood obesity, you can read the rest. And this presentation is online too. We have the rest of the topics for the other 12 episodes. And again, all of these episodes were prioritized and given to us by community members and health professionals working with the target population. So it wasn't given by me. Now, we did have to do to create some health criteria for each of the episodes and to create a format for the interviews and the evaluation. And this was very useful, a very useful tool for me when I was negotiating with the executive producer on how much content had to go into each of the episodes. We had a minimum. We had to at least cover two important points per health topic. We always had to cover CHP Plus and Medicaid in each episode. We at least had to address one myth or barrier, and we had to provide at least one tool that would help the community move. So we're thinking behavioral changes and stages of change. And so this was helpful to me because whenever I would meet, or before I was meeting with the key informants that included the PhDs, the doctors, and the health promoters, they knew I wanted this at the end of the meeting. And the result, I know you can see this, but I was very proud to see the end result because it only shows the commitment again of the executive director to deliver the information to the community. And also, I think I give credit to my negotiation skills because right here, the first column is CHP Plus and Medicaid. And that was the given. This is an exception because it was the only episode that covered that information solely. But then we had Medicaid and CHIP, some information. We had seven health facts, which is not the right title for this topic, but we have 7 points that gave information on new knowledge or maybe old knowledge to some people, right? Because they're in different stages. But we were able to insert all that information in the first episode. We only cover one barrier and myth, but that was the minimum, so it's fine. And then as far as tools, we have 5 tools that were provided to the audience so they could start getting ready to change from whatever stage they were or stay put on changing their behavior. You can see, I can tell you that most of the episodes cover a lot more information. So at the end of the day, what was the impact of Encrucijada? We have statistically significant change. I wasn't really prepared to give you a lot of information on methodology and evaluation because we have another presentation covering just that next door. But I can tell you that we were able to change disease management behaviors, healthy living behaviors, and seeking enrollment in public health insurance. And that was statistically significant. There was some change in knowledge and attitudes towards self-care, family health, and healthy living. I do have to say something more on the seeking enrollment in public health insurance. There is a long process to be able to enroll in public health insurance, so just the fact that people were calling and were asking for information and were getting the paperwork and were moving, it was a big change. I also forgot to tell you that as part of the 12 half-hour episodes, we also had a call center at the end of the show. So the call center was promoted, and it was staffed all the time. So people had a number to call. If you have questions more, if you want more information about Encrucijada, there's the website. And there is our contact information. Thank you.
So now I'm going to ask all of our speakers to please come up here, and we can have some discussion. If you have questions, I certainly hope you can speak loudly. I'll try to repeat them. I have to get a pen first, but I'll try to repeat them to make sure that we understand what your question is. Any, yes.
Last presentation. Who was the audience? Just Colorado? Was the local TV station? Can it be represented by other states and cities? Because you have to call them, and you might have this evaluation built into what response you were getting, right?
Right. The audience was mainly in the front range, but we also have. Actually, this was first aired in 2008, and it's airing for the second time because of the very positive results we had. We were able to get funding for a second airing of the same show. And in the website, people can find the episodes. The first year, we didn't build enough capacity for the whole episode to be able to be run on the website. And this year, people can go and look into the each of the episodes. And we also are able to track data to see what episode they're seeing, when they stop, how long they stay in the website. And the evaluation is pretty comprehensive, and we have information on the main topics that are being selected and inquired about. So it was mainly initially for the front range here. And we are the only, the TV station that is supporting the project is the only station with a news in Spanish. So it's part of the big reason why they have such a big reach. But now with the website being everything in the website, we have a bigger reach and we're able to see where people are coming from. So we have people from Spain, we have people from Canada. We can see all over the globe. Encrucijada is crossroads. It means crossroads without help, there is nothing.
Any other questions? Yes.
This question is for Professor Smith. I'm a medical librarian by profession, so I'm interested in the source you use for your research. Mm-hmm. You mentioned LexisNexis. I'm wondering if you consider any other databases like Scopus, Academic, Premier, because that deserves to have impact on the result. You mentioned that the journal articles actually mention a lot. They come at number one in terms of the mentioning of a freak accidents, and I'm wondering if it's because, let's say, 70% of the content is covered by LexisNexis. Newspapers only contribute about 30%.
Okay.
And then the other thing related to it is the publication years. Did you limit your search to a certain range of publication years, like last 10 years or last 15 years?
I'm just going to repeat the question.
You would see a trend saying that in the last 10 years, more and more people are using freak accidents, mm-hmm. maybe because they are more aware of the lawsuits, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So I'm interested in the process, in the rationale. You select that database, you limit it, or did you ever work with a medical librarian?
Okay. The question for those in the back. Had to do with sources, which I'm sure we'll get into more detail, and then also whether there was, there was looking at some of the sources over time and whether trends could be spotted.
Sure. So I'm going to give you a short answer, a short-ish answer, and then I'd really like to talk to you afterwards in more detail. So we did use LexisNexis, but we didn't use the entire database. We only used it in relation to the three specific newspapers that I talked about. Well, two newspapers and one wire service, so New York Times, Philadelphia Inquirer, and Associated Press. And the most, when, I think there might have been some, so if there are, so any insight that you could provide as to whether ProQuest or another source to get at those specific media sources would be better or different, I'd love to talk to you more about. To just clear up some confusion, it wasn't journal articles that were the top. It was use of the term by journalists. So it wasn't attributed to some particular person. It was that the journalist was calling this a freak accident in the news story. And we limited our search to the last 5 years, kind of because we weren't in this initial exploration looking for changes over time. So we just wanted to make it as relevant as possible, and so we wanted a good enough range of time so that we would get enough articles to look at, but we wanted to sort of limit it to recent years. But we didn't work with a medical librarian, and if there are reasons that we should be using other sources, I'd love to hear about them. So.
Yes, go ahead. The question was about segmentation and which had the most positive effect.
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to look at that because the health media exposure was actually a composite score of the exposure across the 5 different media sources. But that's a very interesting research question that can be further pursued. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Right.
Because, you know, with the cross-sectional data, we can really see how health status could be a driver of media exposure for health information. So I guess the justification for mediation.
Right. I wasn't able to explain in detail the rationale. It's actually in the longer paper that we wrote for this analysis. And I guess the temporal positions of the variables are very important in performing any mediation analysis, that's true. Unfortunately, we only have cross-sectional data. And in the paper, I actually wrote about how prior studies have informed us that the causal pathways leading from media exposure to healthy lifestyle behaviors have been described. And similarly, in biomedical research, we can see that healthy lifestyle behavior tends to be described as preceding health status. So that's how I initially justified testing it this way. But I've described also in the presentation that certainly someone with a poorer health status may be less likely to notice health information on the mass media, or someone with a particular health condition may be seeking for certain health information on the media as well. So the causal direction is unclear, obviously, from the way I've analyzed this data. Yeah, but thank you for the feedback.
Thank you. Yes.
I know it's not really a question, but I'll say one more thing about
about that, because I think you're absolutely right. So the reason I had selected those topics, we had done some pre-testing with cancer patients in terms of developing that larger cancer patient survey, and so when we had done some of that, these topics had come up in some of the discussions I had had with some patients. That was the only foundation, and I think you're right, because when I did the overall validity study using the general population and asking about those broader topics of wine and fish and coffee that would be more relevant to a general population, one of the measures that I was really passionate about and thought was going to be great because it was so specific, my advisor who loves specificity loved it, and it completely backfired because it turns out that it was capturing people's understanding of scientific research rather than their exposure. They were really able to talk about these very specific topics and health consequences because I took it too far. So, yes. Thanks, Kelly.
We have time for one more. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you all for your presentation. Let me ask a follow-up question to you, if I may, because I'm still a little bit confused about the data that you showed that indicated only about 17% of your respondents said that they had received contradictory information.
About 70%. Sure.
So I think what Kelly was pointing out is correct, and that basically this was a very specific population, right? So this was breast, prostate, and colorectal cancer patients. This was my effort to give them pretty specific information that I thought might be out there in the environment based on some conversations I had had with patients, but really no clear evidence that there were a ton of studies. And as Kelly said, there's probably not very many studies that talk about, you know, they're really linking low-fat diet to, you know, decreased recurrence and so forth. Headline here, headline there, but that's about what you see. So from an exposure reporting standpoint, if there's not a lot of information in the media, these are actually accurate reports. You wouldn't expect people, again, for those specific topics to be reporting a lot, because then they would actually be, well, it's actually then a very bad exposure measure because it's capturing some over general sense of desire to report exposure to contradictions rather than the questions that I was asking. Does that make sense? So whereas when I looked at the general population and I asked whether people had heard that wine and other alcohol consumption had been linked to heart health, and then whether they had heard that it had been linked to increased risk of breast cancer, much greater reports with the general population to topics like that. So you're feeling that this information is ubiquitous. I think with a general population with topics like that, it's true. And that is substantiated, I should say, by that content analysis that I did, where I found that those topics received a lot of that kind of contradictory information in the news media. So if from a validity standpoint, you feel more comfortable that the information people were giving me, saying, yeah, I'm hearing a lot of this information, that there's some basis for it, because I see that in the media analysis that I do as well. So I think that these findings are pretty specific to that population that I looked at, to the cancer patient population, and to those very specific topics that I was trying to focus for clinical relevance. Does that make sense? Yeah, thanks. Thank you for your questions.
Well, thank you all for staying through. Enjoy your lunch if you haven't had it yet, and please thank you to all of the presenters.